The numbers told the story. They always do.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
He's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
It is a numbers game here on VSiN. Happy to be with you. I'm Jeff Parles. He is Brian Ortega. This hour, Jake Asman, ESPN Houston, the wheelhouse, will be with us to talk all things AFC East after we've gone through all the team previews. And then Brady Cannon joins us at the end of the show for some golf talk. Ortega, you had a question during the break, and it kind of spun into a different discussion. Your question to me was,
who has a better second season, Trevor Lawrence or Justin Fields?
And that got spun into, okay, which of the second-year quarterbacks? Because, of course, we're actually dealing with a second-year quarterback a little bit later when we break down Houston and Davis Mills, who seemingly gets forgotten, even though Davis Mills actually played pretty well last year, all things considered, especially after the early onslaught where he looked totally lost. To answer your question, it's Lawrence, just because of what we documented last week with the Bears. The Bears just a horrible job building around Justin Fields. These years of the rookie contract are so critical to get it right, and Chicago has gotten it so, just on paper, so wrong that I think just by default, Trevor Lawrence is the guy that would have a better season between the two of them. Now, I wouldn't be shocked if I'm wrong, because if Fields is as good as I thought he was coming out of Ohio State, he could even carry that collection of mediocrity a little bit further than you would expect. But it kind of devolved into a conversation, Brian, and we'll get to the Colts in a second, of the second-year guys, which, of course, Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, Trey Lance, Justin Fields, Mac Jones, and Davis Mills, amazingly enough, the six. Who is the best season of all of them? And I'm willing to hear anyone's take on that. I feel like Mac Jones is going to be the most consistent of the bunch. And I also feel that Zach Wilson is going to have the widest range of the bunch. Where Zach Wilson, it wouldn't shock me if it's, the Jets are going to have to draft another quarterback in 2024. Or Zach Wilson turns into a legitimate NFL starter. Wouldn't shock me. That range just isn't as far for Lawrence, where I just don't see Lawrence going to being bad to the point of like, oh my God, Jacksonville might have to give up on this guy after year three if he doesn't improve. I don't think we get that point, but we could get the high end for Lawrence. But again, that schedule's just so brutal for Jacksonville, weeks through to 10. Just bad sequencing more than anything for Jacksonville. And that's kind of the story of what it ends up being for a bunch of these teams that should be improved this year. Just horrible schedule sequencing in the end. All right, to Indy we go. The odds-on favorites to win the AFC South. Minus 115 on the Indianapolis Colts. And Brian, you want something that will surprise you here? You know, last time the Indianapolis Colts won the AFC South was?
When was that?
How about 2014? That stunned me when I looked at when I went through that last night in the prep for the show. You think Indy consistent playoff team usually. They haven't won this division in 8 years, which is kind of amazing when you think about it. Of course, the 2014 season for the Indianapolis Colts, the Colts were the 4 seed in the AFC. They beat Cincinnati in their first playoff game. They actually upset Peyton Manning in Denver at Mile High and then got absolutely obliterated in the AFC title game by the New England Patriots. That was, of course, leading into the decision not to run the ball from the 1 yard line by Bevel in Seattle. Looking at Indianapolis, win total 10.5, high win total, juiced under though at minus 145. Make the playoffs, minus 190 on Indy, plus 155 on the take back on the miss. Minus 120, according to these odds. So I guess these odds are bouncing around here at BetMGM, even during the show here. 12-1 to win the AFC South, 25-1 to win the Super Bowl. Of course, Matt Ryan. Another year, another Indianapolis quarterback. Traded from Atlanta. Matt Ryan, you know, here's the deal with Matt Ryan. I'm in the camp that Matt Ryan is more than likely done at this point. But here's the thing. When you're looking at what Matt Ryan needs to be this year. He just needs to be better than Carson Wentz was a year ago. So the standards are not that high for Matt Ryan. If Matt Ryan goes out and does what he did with the Falcons last year, which was 67% completion percentage, nearly 4,000 yards passing, 20 touchdowns to 12 interceptions, Indianapolis will win this division. Indy will win the division. And Jonathan Taylor, who, if it wasn't for Cooper Kupp's insane season, would have won Offensive Player of the Year, the second best running back in the NFL just behind Derrick Henry, an offensive line that is still near the top of the league, if not the top. Wide receiving core, where I expect Michael Pittman to have a big year as their number one receiver. Alec Pierce, I think, will actually have a pretty nice impact right away, the rookie out of Cincinnati. But Indianapolis, again, the one thing when going through this, because I'm in the camp that Indy will win this division because someone has to win this division. I think 10.5, I would bet the under. I still would look at 10-7, probably being 10-7, 9-8 being the record for Indianapolis. Their defense is still fine. By the way, Darius Leonard now going as Shaquille Leonard. I read that yesterday.
That's true.
Okay. So Shaquille Leonard now in the middle there, always a potential defensive player of the year, longer shot. They get Yannick Ngakoue coming over from Vegas to help out that defensive line that, again, defensive line a little bit underrated. DeForest Buckner, as we know, great player. Kwity Paye, I think, will take a leap in year two. They signed to Stephon Gilmore from Carolina. I don't know how much Gilmore really has in the tank as a big-time corner, but it's something. But Indianapolis, if we look at Indy's schedule here, Indianapolis opens the season, and we already talked about this. Indianapolis' schedule is bizarrely put together. 5 division games in the first 7 weeks. And then the only remaining division game is home game against Houston, week 18. Schedule makers did some weird things this year. And I know you have to because the extra game makes it even harder to make the schedule. But 5 of the first 8 games in division, all your Tennessee and Jacksonville games done by week 7. Week 7. So they play one divisional game after October. 5 divisional games before Halloween, even. Very strange scheduling for Indianapolis.
Do you think this is the NFL just not caring about the AFC South?
I don't think it's that pride.
So being a Packer fan, we follow the schedule quite often. It's almost as we always have a divisional games in the first couple of weeks and then the very last couple of weeks as well.
Well, week 18, of course, we know is a requirement.
Right, of course. But it just feels like this is such a bizarre schedule,
So we've had some weird ones. We talked about Baltimore yesterday. 4 AFC East games to begin the year. The Jets, 4 AFC North games to begin the NFL season. But this is just very weird. And it's actually, in all honesty, not a bad thing for Indianapolis that these games are early. Now, you may want to argue, it's not great to have your divisional games early. What happens if you're still working things out? Guys, the divisional opponents are not good. So your schedule, because you play, it's front-loaded with divisional opponents, and really until we get through week 8, because you have Washington at home then, Indy's going to be favored in 6 of 8 games, maybe even 7 of 8 if Kansas City starts poorly, and Indy looks sharp against the 2 bad teams on the road in Houston and Jacksonville. Again, we know Indy hasn't won in Jacksonville in 8 years now, but at some point, that trend has to end. And you look at the back end of the schedule, you know, the schedule's not really that difficult. Really isn't. NFC East, cross with the AFC West as well. That extra 17th game is at Minnesota, which that is as coin flippy on paper to me in a week 15 spot as you can. By the way, very late bye for Indy, week 14 this year. But the Colts, again, someone has to win this division. And even though I don't love this Indianapolis team, when you put all the pieces together here, the way the schedule sequencing is, the fact that Matt Ryan only really has to outperform what Carson Wentz did a year ago, Tennessee looking very weak this year in comparison to what they've been the last two, three years. Of course, AFC title game is a six seed, division championship, division championship. Indy will more than likely win this division. Now, I don't see them being a threat to do anything in the playoffs. I think they're far behind all the AFC West teams. I think they're behind the top two teams in the AFC North, too, for that mention. And they're clearly behind Buffalo. So I just listed off six teams, at least, that Indy, I think, is worse than, even though they'll be in the postseason.
It also looks like their tough games are really spaced out.
Their tough
really
games.
Spaced out.
Kansas City week three. I guess you can technically say Kansas City and Tennessee back-to-back is not the easiest back-to-back with Denver after that going to Mile High. Raiders and Eagles, not a great back-to-back. But yeah, they have some tougher back-to-backs. But again, when you look at that, then it's like, oh, you have Houston and Jacksonville back-to-back. You have the Giants and Houston back-to-back then this season. Indianapolis will win this division. But they are not a real threat to do anything in the playoffs. And it could honestly look like last year where maybe Indy stuns us, gets the one seed in the AFC, but then bows out early in the playoffs, kind of like Tennessee did last year. That scenario would not surprise me at all as well. We're going to Houston, bare bones and all, with the Texans next here on A Numbers Game. We're back on A Numbers Game here on VSiN. Happy to be with you. I'm Jeff Parles. He's Brian Ortega. Excitement brewing in the studio for what we have coming up right now. We do have excitement, though, for 15 minutes from now. Jake Asman, host of the Wheelhouse in Houston, will join us to talk all things AFC South. You know, Brian, I really wanted to come on here today and say something outlandish in this division, but we really are kind of just going through this as chalk. Total chalk so far in this division. And Indy's going to win it because their schedule plays out nicely. Tennessee's probably going to be back to being average again. The Jaguars' schedule's brutal week 2 through 10. Is there anything fun we can get with this next team? Is there anything fun here other than maybe Lovie Smith's magnificent beard? Not really with the Houston Texans. Of course, the Texans last year, on paper, looked like the worst roster we had seen in probably about 5 years in the NFL. Been a while. And yet the Houston Texans, and again, shout out to David Culley, who really just looked like he had no idea what he was doing on the sidelines. They won week one against Urban, and then Urban, of course, said, it was like, I was like playing Alabama every week. And it's like, you're saying that after playing the Texans? David Culley did as well as he humanly could have with this team. They won four games last year, and David Culley got fired, which was totally unjust. There's no reason to fire David Culley for Houston. It's silly. Let him coach another way. Like, the man's going to get one opportunity to be a head coach of the NFL. You really only can give him 1 year with that horrible team? Let's give him a second crack at it. Maybe he could win a few more games. They promote Lovie Smith, which, again, Lovie, another guy who I kind of think Lovie's gotten a bad rap over these years, Brian. Like, I mean, Lovie made a Super Bowl with Rex Grossman as his quarterback. Like, I mean, that's an accomplishment in its own right. I mean, Lovie at Illinois at the college ranks was bad. I'm not arguing that. But Lovie is an NFL head coach closer to league average than I think he's given credit for. And now with Houston, you look at their betting profile. 4.5 is the win total. Brian, you want 14-1 to make the playoffs? You want that?
No.
I would need 34-1 at least to take that. Minus 5,000 to miss, 25-1 to win the AFC South, 150-1 to win the AFC, 300-1 to win the Super Bowl. Don't worry about those numbers. They're irrelevant. They're not winning the Super Bowl. Not winning the AFC. They're not winning the AFC South. I think the big thing with Houston, because as you look at their roster, why is Brandon Cook still on this team? Why didn't they trade him for some assets? Draft picks? Someone be willing to give you at least a reasonable 2 draft picks potentially for Cooks, even though he's on the back end of his career. You know, also, Brian, I was going through this with Brandon Cooks, and I just have to make sure that I have my notes right. You know how old Brandon Cooks is? What would you guess how old Brandon Cooks is?
I would say Brandon Cooks is at least 30.
He's 28. I would have guessed he was 32. Feels like Brandon Cooks has hung around a long time. He's younger than I am still. But he is the one guy, at least pass catcher-wise, like Brandon Cooks is still a legitimate NFL wide receiver. Nico Collins, Philly Dorsett, Chris Connolly, Chris Moore, the other guys you would anticipate getting targets this year. Their tight ends are Brevin Jordan and Faro Brown. Yikes. Yikes. For the pass catching options at the tight end position. Marlon Mack, Rex Burkhead. You see some Damian Pierce. A little bit as well, the rookie. You see him. But Davis Mills is your starting quarterback here. Now, Brian, this is going into this year. Remember, Davis Mills, they was the first non-first-round quarterback in the 2021 draft. And Davis Mills, at one point, we thought someone could trade back into the back end of the first round, which would have been a terrible mistake. But Houston did use the first pick of the third round on him at pick 67. And all things considered, I thought Davis Mills actually afforded himself pretty well last year. For a guy that the first things we saw of Mills looked pretty disastrous last year. But in the end, Davis Mills almost throws 400 passes, 67% completion percentage, 2,600 yards, 16 touchdowns, 10 picks, with really not a lot of talent around him. Davis Mills played well last year. And I now think has a legitimate shot to be a starter in this league and a starter in Houston for the time being. But the way that this is constructed for Houston, where if Davis Mills underperforms and regresses, which could happen as well, all right, we'll be fine. We'll have top 3 pick in this draft. We'll end up with Bryce Young or C.J. Stroud. It's fine. Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that at all for Houston. But Davis Mills was a pleasant surprise last year. Other than, like, look, in that game against Carolina, where he had to come in, or excuse me, actually started that game. It looked great, even though the numbers don't look terrible. The Buffalo game was obviously an abject disaster, but what are you going to do? But other than that Buffalo game, you take that Buffalo game out, his numbers actually were really good, like I said. Because he had a 50% completion percentage in that game and threw 4 interceptions on 21 passes in inclement weather, and they lost 40-0. Not sure if you know, Brian, losing 40-0 is not what you want to do.
Is that, you're not supposed to do that?
Not supposed to do that. But again, I thought Davis Mills and also the 31-0 loss to Indy, but Mills got hurt in that game, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, we saw Taylor in that game. Actually, that was the game Taylor started, I should say, and then Mills came in the rest of the way. But Davis Mills has the potential to be a totally average quarterback this year, which would probably be good enough for Houston to get their goal of probably 3-4 wins. You look at props here for Houston real quick, and then we'll look at their schedule because we're going to be going through their schedule to try to figure out how that 4.5 looks out here. 3,700.5 for Mills on passing yards. 21.5 passing touchdown. By the way, Mills along with those other second-year quarterbacks, 14.5 on the interceptions. So remember, those interceptions have been higher. I actually think that's a pretty reasonable under at 14.5 for Mills interceptions. Cooks, 950.5 yards, 5.5 touchdowns. I don't want anything to do with this. But Davis Mills having a better-than-expected season would not shock me. Now, will that mean that Houston will win a few more games than they're supposed to? No, I don't think it will. You look at Houston's schedule here. You open the season with Indy at home. Brian, they're already more than a touchdown underdog in this game. They're a 7.5-point underdog at home to Indy week 1. Man, I'm going to have a lot of ugly underdogs, I think, on my betting card week one. I haven't made anything yet because, I know there are some people that will go out bet week 1 month in advance. That's not how I'm wired. Can't do it. What happens if someone gets hurt in the preseason? Can't do it.
And, like, this team, like, the players might play, you know? It's like...
Mills will get some reps in the preseason. I feel pretty confident on that. Looking at their schedule now, though. Indy, as we said, they're 7.5-point underdog week one at home. Pretty brutal week two also. At Denver, they're probably going to lose that game. First home game for Russell Wilson. But then after that, even though they're both on the road, winnable games at Chicago and winnable game at Jacksonville. Remember the main, I know everyone points to other things with the Chargers missing the playoffs last year. But the main reason the Chargers missed the playoffs was because they got destroyed by essentially Houston's practice squad because of COVID issues late in the season. And what was another absurdist result that happened last year? But you eyeball the schedule. They cross with the AFC West. You get Cleveland in a cross game at home. The extra game is Chicago, which is a pretty good draw on the road. Houston replicating 4-13 would make a lot of sense to me, Brian. 4-13 again feels right, which I guess would put me under the 4.5. But them getting to 5 if they win a few road games they're not supposed to early in the year, where there'll be a dog in Chicago and likely be a dog in Jacksonville, they could push 5. I think 5 is their max, though. 2-15 would not shock me either with the roster they have. Again, that defense just has nothing. I mean, Derek Stingley Jr. walks right in the room and is their best defensive player right away. But they'll be more competitive than we think. They'll cover games as big underdogs. Because Lovey, I do think, is a pretty reasonable improvement over Coley. And as we said, Davis Mills, all things considered, wasn't terrible last year. Is actually pretty reasonable. And there was a legitimate case to be made that Mills was actually the second-best rookie quarterback last year. I think he would say that he was the second-best rookie quarterback last year based off the number. Only Mac Jones was better. Jake Asman's going to join us next. Jake, of course, one of the three hosts of The Wheelhouse on ESPN Radio in Houston. We'll get his thoughts on the whole AFC South coming up next. A numbers game here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Football betting guides are coming soon, and there is no better way to prepare for college and pro football this season. Our experts provide profiles of every team with advanced stats and power ratings, plus best bets on season win totals, division finishes, and player awards. Reserve your copy of the football betting guides today and get access to everything we offer for the entire football season with a VSiN all-access subscription. Make this football season your best ever. Subscribe now, VSiN.com/subscribe. This is a numbers game here on VSiN. I'm Parlay. He's Ortega. Happy to be with you this morning. And now with us, call this next guest a friend and a darn good radio host as well down in the city of Houston. Co-host of The Wheelhouse on ESPN Houston 97.5. And also... I see him on Sports Map Radio as well, Jake Asman Show. It is Jake Asman of ESPN Houston. Jake, thanks as always for being on with us.
Jeff, anytime, man. I always appreciate you having me on. Hope all's well.
So all is going well. It was not 100 degrees here yesterday, which might have been the biggest upset of all in recent times. Jake, of course, you're in Houston. Now, we just did a little bit of a Texans preview. We'll start there and we'll work our way from the bottom to the top here in this division. But, Jake, Davis Mills was actually better than he gets credit for last year. The numbers actually looked pretty good when it was all said and done. Of course, a new coach in Lovie Smith taking over for David Culley. Win totals 4.5 here for Houston, Jake. Just going through it, I think 4 is right. But where do you see the Texans ending up this year?
I think the win total is probably pretty fair if you just look at the roster. I will say this team a year ago did win four games, and they had a head coach in David Culley who, I mean, if you actually watch the games, and I recognize people were not watching Houston Texans football on a week-in, week-out basis, he was not a very good coach. And also, I think with Lovie Smith, they significantly upgraded there. I understand Lovie is the head coach for the third time, but Lovie Smith, I think, has proven in his career, at the minimum, he could be an average NFL head coach. So I think they upgraded there. The question with the Texans, and you already mentioned Davis Mills, it's Davis Mills, though, right? I mean, he's a second-year player. He is going to be given every opportunity to be this team's starter. They have had multiple chances to bring in Jimmy Garoppolo, Baker Mayfield when they made the Deshaun trade. And everything I've been told from people in the building and everything they have said publicly is that they really like Davis Mills. And they want to give him a real chance to prove if he could be the long-term answer there. They're going to have two first-round picks. It's possible, depending on a Deshaun suspension in Cleveland, it could be two picks in the top 10. So if Davis Mills doesn't perform, they could certainly be drafting his replacement in the first round. But if he plays like how he finished the year, the last five or six games or so, and you project that out over the course of a full season, you know, that's an above-average quarterback right there. So the question for the Texans is going to be, you know, what is Davis Mills? And, you know, on top of that, how much does Davis Mills have around him when you look at the weaponry that they're giving him to actually go out there and prove he could be the guy? So I think they're going to win in that 4-5 win range. And if Davis Mills takes a big step, though, and he's better than anyone expects, yeah, then, yeah, maybe they could surprise and definitely go over that win total and, you know, maybe win six, seven games.
Seven games. Lovie Smith should be in coach of the year consideration, Jake.
That's right. That's right. I mean, the real question, though, is just how good Davis Mills is and just how much better can this defense be? You know, if you look at the raw numbers last year, the Texans defense kept them in a lot of games, but they were just burnt out because they were on the field so much. Texans is the worst rushing offense in the league, and Mills didn't really put it together till the last five or six games, as we talked about, Jeff. So you know, they added Derek Stingley. They drafted Jalen Petrie. You know, they signed a plethora of guys on defense, their defensive line with John Grenard. A couple of others is actually a little better than probably most people realize. I'm not going to sit there and tell you this is a great team because they're certainly not. But I do think there's a chance they go over their win total. It won't be by much, but if I actually had to make a play, I might actually go over the 4.5.
Yeah, I look, 5-12 wouldn't stun me just on the basis of, like you said, Lovie is an upgrade over Culley. You and I agree on that. Jake, let's go to the projected top team in this division here. We'll go to Indianapolis. And just going through this, Jake, there is one really weird scheduling quirk with the Colts. 7 weeks, Jake, they play five divisional games the first 7 weeks of the season. And some would say, oh, this could work against them because they're playing all these division games early in the season. But I would argue that this is going to be really good for Indianapolis because you're playing a weaker part of your schedule when you're trying to figure out what Matt Ryan truly is on this team.
I think it's a great point. You know, I had not even noticed that they play all those divisional games to start the year. I mean, I think it's a good thing, right? You're going to get the Texans who are trying to work in a bunch of new players, and they're obviously having a new head coach with Lovie Smith. The same thing could be said with Doug Peterson with the Jaguars. And the Titans are certainly the second-best team in that division, but I don't think the Tennessee Titans necessarily scare the Colts. I think Indy is rightfully the favorites, and you know, maybe getting off to a good start, like it seems like their schedule has set them up to be able to do that, will give them that confidence they need, kind of erase that Carson Wentz stink because of the way their season ended a year ago down in Jacksonville. So I think Indy's in a pretty good spot here to maybe get a lot of people to buy into them as a legit, you know, playoff threat if they go off to that good start, as you alluded to.
Yeah, for me, Jake, going through this last night and prepping for this division, it was, all right, someone's got to win this division. It'll likely be Indy. But there is one path, though, for the Colts where they could be like Tennessee last year, where they run through the regular season, surprise everyone, get the one seed, and again, didn't work out for Tennessee. But there is an opportunity where the AFC playoffs, because of how good the AFC West is, maybe Buffalo, slow start to the year hurts them like it did last year. Maybe the playoffs go through Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis.
Right. And if you beat up on the teams in your own division, you got a real chance. You got a real chance. And I think the Tennessee comparison is great because we literally saw it last year. So I like Indy. I think if Matt Ryan goes out there and he just manages their offense. They have enough on, you know, with their running game with Jonathan Taylor. They got a good enough offensive line. They obviously have a solid head coach in Frank Reich, and their defense is still very good. This is a team that should win double-digit games and certainly be a first-place team in their own division.
Jake, how hard is the regress going to hit Tennessee this year?
I'm with you, Jeff. I'm kind of waiting for the other shoe to fall with the Titans, so to speak. I mean, I thought last year Vrabel did a great job overachieving with that group. I know both he and then John Robinson, their GM, were the respective coach and executives of the year. I just don't know how sustainable that is, right? You lose A.J. Brown. I understand you drafted his replacement, but you're relying a lot on a rookie to come in and fill that void. And I've never been the biggest Ryan Tannehill fan. I think he's solid. I don't know if you're ever going to win big with that guy. So I'm with you. I think we could see some regression there from Tennessee.
The only team we haven't mentioned so far in this segment, by the way, Jake Asman with us right now, ESPN Houston, one of the hosts of The Wheelhouse, which you hear weekdays on ESPN Houston. Jake, Jacksonville, of course, arguably the worst head coach season of all time last year from Urban Meyer. They win three games. Trevor Lawrence disappoints for the most part. An adult in the room now with Doug Peterson as the head coach. What do you make of this Jacksonville team going into, let's face it, what will be a critical year for evaluating what Trevor Lawrence can be in this league?
Let me say this. No one was given more of a pass last year than Trevor Lawrence. Part of it is because of the Urban Meyer situation, and that's a legitimate thing to bring up, of course. But I think a lot of it also had to do with the fact, well, he's in Jacksonville, and nobody cares about the Jacksonville Jaguars, if we're being honest. So this is a big year for Trevor Lawrence. We kept hearing about how he's the best quarterback prospect since Andrew Luck or Peyton Manning or John Elway. You know, he better take a big step because I think the Jaguars, even though they may be overpaid for a lot of what they did in free agency, they clearly have improved the roster. They added a Super Bowl-winning head coach who is, you know, a supposedly great play caller in Doug Peterson. So Trevor Lawrence better take a big step. If this team flames out again and they're picking near the top of the draft, I mean, I think you have to have legitimate questions about whether or not Trevor Lawrence is ever going to be the guy if he struggles again this year.
It's pretty amazing that even could be in consideration, Jake. With, like you said, the best prospect at quarterback since Andrew Luck. And again, Trevor Lawrence underachieving last year, led the league in interceptions. But again, I'm just going to be fascinated to see what he does without Urban Meyer there. Again, just how bad that tenure was. He's Jake Asman, everyone. Again, you can get him on the tweets at his name, Jake Asman, A-S-M-A-N is how you spell Asman, one of the co-hosts of The Wheelhouse, which you get 3 o'clock Central Time to 7 o'clock Central Time every weekday afternoon. Jake, it's always a pleasure, man. Good to catch up with you, and we'll talk again soon.
Likewise, Jeff. I'm looking forward to seeing you. I'll be at Circa in August, and I can't wait to link up.
Oh, look at that. See, the man knows where to go. Probably be at Stadium Swim, one of the hottest days of the year as well. Jake Asman, everyone. Again, co-host of The Wheelhouse on ESPN Houston. I will say this, one last thing on the AFC South, because the order of finish, because we've got our guy Braden Canning coming up next to talk about the Rocket Mortgage Classic. Indy wins the division. Tennessee finishes second. Jacksonville finishes third. Houston finishes fourth. This is one of those divisions where, as we talked about it more today, I think my initial thought that Indy's only going to win the division for needing someone to win the division, Indy's going to run away with this thing. The rest of the division just not up to par. Brady Cannon joins us in studio next here on A Numbers Game. BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks, unleashes the spirit of Las Vegas with BetMGM Rewards. Every time you make a wager at BetMGM, you can earn BetMGM Rewards points that can be redeemed for online credit, like free bets and risk-free tokens. Planning a trip to Vegas, you can convert your BetMGM points into MGM Rewards points that you can use towards dining, shows, hotel rooms, and plenty more at over 20 MGM properties located on the Strip in Vegas and nationwide. BetMGM Rewards, sports betting's premier loyalty program featuring exclusive offers, incredible experiences, and valuable perks when you wager on the BetMGM app. So sign up with BetMGM or log on today to get an even bigger piece of the action with BetMGM Rewards. Eligibility restrictions apply. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. You must be 21 or older to place a wager. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Final segment here on a Wednesday here on A Numbers Game. I'm Jeff Parles, Brian Ortega here as well. Brady Cannon in the flesh here in studio.
It's a Wednesday. Yes. We're here to talk golf once again.
You nice little vacation last week, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's good to see you back. You got a little color as well. You're doing great, Brady.
Some nice time off, clear the head, and start to get ever more ready for football.
Before we get to the Rocket Mortgage Classic real quick, how far into your football prep are you right now at this point in July? Or is that really an August undertaking
for you? Actually, it really starts to kick in for me today.
Okay.
After I get back to the office, I'm going to start diving into a bunch of stuff. I've read a couple of books already, so some superficial prep so far. Have taken a look at week one and all the point spreads and whatnot, but probably for the next 30 days will be the full-fledged push.
Contest-wise this year, you know what you're going to do?
Well, the usuals, you know. I've got that one ring. I'm trying to get that blue coat. So I want to add a blue coat to the collection. But I think I'm going to dabble in Survivor this year for the first time. It's never been my forte, Survivor. But when you can turn 1,000 into a million, I think you have to take a shot.
Oh, I would say so. But again, it just... Gil is the number one fan of Survivor at the network. I think that's a pretty safe
fan. I think is treating it lightly.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty safe way to put it. But it just, you know, I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to do this year. I know our guy Wes Reynolds and I are going to run it back.
Oh, good. You guys had a good year last year.
We had a good year, but again, it's just so hard in these picks contests, and it's fine trying to figure out which contest is going to have less people. Because the more people in a field,
it'll be the Westgate. I think.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that. The Super Contest will probably have less entries than
Circa. It's very interesting. We were talking about this, and if you try and figure out which is giving you kind of the better positive EV, Circa has greater amount of dollars paid out, or it has a greater number of winners paid. I think they pay the top 100. Top 50 or top 100?
I have to double check it. Circa pays out more at the end of the year. Circa also has the booby prize.
Yeah.
So if you go have a horrible year and horrible quarters, you can do that. Westgate has started doing quarterly payouts in those 3-week
And they've
contests.
Got even more this year.
Right.
They've got even more quarterly or in-season payouts, if you will. And you're competing against less people. So I think, you know, I didn't break down all the math. We'd have to ask somebody else to do that for us. But I think your odds are pretty equal between the two contests, given all the, you know, variables.
Yeah, it will be a decision that is made. We very well may do what we did last year and go into both.
Yeah.
So it's just a matter of trying to figure that out over these next few weeks. Survivor, I want to do Survivor, Brady. I'm just week one this year. I know you already looked at week one.
All the home dogs.
All these home dogs. In the past, it would be like, all right, you know what? I'll just take the Thursday night game. If I lose, I can rebuy on Saturday. You can't do that this year with Buffalo and the Rams. You can't do that.
Right.
So it's just one of those. It's like, well, do I really
want... And are you really getting into a contest saying, you know what? If I lose 1,000, I'm going to spend another 1,000.
Yeah, well, that too. And also, too, like,
that's kind of a defeatist attitude.
I don't feel like blowing a dime in one day,
right,
which is essentially what would end up happening on a season-long contest. And again, like, looking at it, like, do I really want Indianapolis and Matt Ryan's first game as a cold on the road at Houston?
We've seen that scenario before when
like
they were at Jacksonville in week one.
Yep,
took out about
ago.
40% of the field.
Exactly. And it just... Survivor is going to be, if you get through week one this year, I think this is going to be the biggest carnage we've ever seen in week one.
Could be.
Because of the way that
the spreads are. Yeah, absolutely.
And it wouldn't shock me, like, hey, it could come down to Seattle and Denver on Monday night and be like, oh my goodness, we could be losing half the field if Seattle beats Denver week one on that Monday night. All right, Brady, let's get to golf. First off, how did you do last week?
I was on vacation.
You just took the whole week off.
I did pretty well for the British Open.
Good.
Did not hit the winner, hit a few top 20s, did really well in my matchups, probably broke about even. We did win our majors draft that we have here
with
a lot
of
locals.
Yes, I heard that, yes.
Yeah. So Wes and I actually won two of the four major drafts this year
with all of our
local peers, so that was good. That helped.
That's always a good, not only a little more cash in your pocket, more bragging rights for the two of you, which is also important, as we know. So this week, Brady, Rocket Mortgage Classic, they're in Detroit, birdie fest tournament yet again.
It's going to be a birdie fest, and if you look at the way these holes set up, you've got three of the four par fives are reachable. One is pretty lengthy, over 600 yards. Four of the par fours are less than 400 yards, and then two of the par threes are going to play in the neighborhood of 150 yards. And what it all boils down to when I looked at these holes is I think these players are going to face a number of shots that are 150 yards or less when they approach the green. And so I really leaned on that stat heavily. Who's really good from 150 yards or less with their wedge play? It's also going to come down to having a hot putter. I played Keegan Bradley at 45 to 1. He's now down to 35 or 40. But surprisingly, this guy has never been a good putter, but he's having a tremendous season with the putter, and he makes a lot of birdies. So he made my card. Russell Henley at 55 to 1. I've seen him at 60. He is actually the best player in the field in proximity to the hole from less than 150 yards. And he's a Donald Ross specialist. We're playing a Donald Ross course next week as well for the Wyndham at Sedgefield. And Russell Henley has had great success on Donald Ross design. So I like the way he matches up. Same thing for Chris Kirk. I played Chris Kirk at 60 to 1. I've seen him down to 45. Next to Henley, he's the second best player in the field with a wedge in his hand from less than 150. If there's two of the premier Donald Ross specialists in the field this week, it's probably Webb Simpson and Siwoo Kim. And I took a shot with Siwoo Kim. The last four times he's played Sedgefield, next week's venue, he's finished second, fifth, third, and first. So it hasn't quite translated over to the Detroit Golf Club yet, but maybe it will this week. I just like that angle with Siwoo Kim. Scott Stallings, I played at 72 to 1. This guy is really good when it comes to a birdie fest. He's one of the best players in the field at wedge play and putting. He just finished eighth at the Travelers and fourth at the John Deere. The Travelers also has the same type of putting surfaces that we'll find this week here in Detroit. So I thought Scott Stallings made a lot of sense. And then I took two really long bombs, Jeff. Chase Seifert and Andrew Novak. You probably haven't even heard of those guys.
I know who Seifert is. I have not heard Andrew Novak.
They're both at 300 to 1. And admittedly, I had heard very little of them before as well. But incredibly, they really pop on the stats for wedge play at less than 150 yards. Now, they're you know, they're 300 to 1 for a reason. They're not tremendous players. They're not great putters. Again, this is just a flyer. But when you look at the stats, these guys are really good with that sharp wedge play, you know, from, say, 100 to 150 yards. So I took a flyer with the two of them each at 300 to 1.
I was hopeful you were going to get like a Robert Garrigus mention or something.
Boy.
Something way
isn't
down
he a live guy already?
No, he is.
He's still
he is playing this week.
He's still
he is
on the good side.
Board. Yeah, at least for now, at least. You're not doing anything with the live. Correct?
No, It and I said this to Gil a long time ago. It's almost a matter of principle for me.
Okay.
I don't want to support
respect that.
I don't really want to support that tour, whether it be betting or watching. It's hard to watch anyway. I mean, you can't even find a leaderboard hardly online, but I don't know. We'll see. Ought to be an interesting offseason.
Yeah, I would say so. The live news yesterday, Sergio Garcia wants to keep his Ryder Cup eligibility and
didn't want to resign
from the DP. Well, again, he's already lost his captaincy, which, by the way, just make it easy, by the way. Just give Eduardo Molinari the captaincy. Ryder Cup's in
well,
Italy next
year. Well, what
I
don't understand for Stenson is why not wait until after the Ryder Cup if you're going to join the LIV Tour? And second of all, I think it's awful to not honor the commitment. You know, that's a big deal to be awarded the captaincy of the Ryder Cup, and you just ditch that a couple months ahead of time. Well, that's bad. I was always going to remember this guy for his final round duel with Mickelson to win the British Open. Now he's got another little notch on his resume that's in the negative column.
Brady, do you have any matchups this week or no?
Yeah, four matchups. Chris Kirk, let's see. Chris Kirk at minus 150 over Kevin Streelman. Adam Svensson at plus 130 over Mackenzie Hughes. That price has come down a little bit. Max Homa at minus 150 over Adam Scott. And then I also took Kevin Kisner at plus 140 over Cam Davis, your defending champ. That price has come down a little bit as well.
Long shots, of course.
Yep.
Already out.
Deason.com/podcast.
Deason.com, where you can find that. You'll also find it overnight as well, leading into the tournament here in Detroit. Brady, pleasure as always.
You bet. Thank you.
Thank you, Brian. Thank you, everyone downstairs. I'm Jeff Bartles. This has been A Numbers Game. The Lombardi Line, Ben Wilson, Mike Pritchard coming next.